This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 49, Gary Kirsten's Face. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, it's all about Gary Kirsten and specifically about his face. Mark Garraway has the lowdown about what we are talking about there. Plus, we answer listeners' questions, both about bowling, one about foot position and one about the grip. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. It doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you are. We don't discriminate here. All we are doing is talking about cricket for the next half an hour or so. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And joining me on the line, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Just relaxing after a long day, I suspect.
Yeah, we've had a great day at Millfield today. Got Gary Kirsten with us for the week.
Fantastic.
Which has just been one of the best coaching experiences I've had for a long time. I have to say, there's no surprise that this fellow was a fantastic international cricketer in his own right, but also won a World Cup with India and taken India and South Africa to number one in the world. He's absolutely amazing. What I love about the way that he works is the passion that he shows with every cricketer, whether it be a 10-year-old all the way through to one of our top players in the school. It's been wonderful, and then backed up with some fantastic news from Sri Lanka today that George Bartlett, one of our upper six formers, has scored a second. Well, he's got the two top scores on the tour for England 19s at the moment, so he's doing some really good work with Dead Chuff for him. So, yeah, it's been a great day, and my glass of Sauvignon Blanc is going down very nicely.
Yeah, it's what is it that really, to you, that makes a coach stand out when you see them working? When you think, when you see someone, you think, you know, this guy is, you know, a head and shoulders above other people. What are those things, or is it a bit of an X factor thing?
Well, it is a bit of X factor, but there's some pretty simple things that sit behind that. Obviously, a huge amount of knowledge picked up for his playing and coaching career, but it's more about the way that it's delivered. So, yeah. You know, I've heard all of the messages before, but they're just delivered in such a personal and precise fashion. And he delivers it with passion throughout. His facial expressions are brilliant, and he really accentuates the words that he wants to drive home. The things that will underpin changes in behaviour, or maybe opening up an avenue that has previously not been explored before. And it's been brilliant. We've also got Ryan Cook. So Jimmy Cook, the great South African batter, his son Ryan, who used to work at Millfield School, is also working alongside him. And also Ryan van der Kerk as well, that make up that academy. And alongside that, we've got Alfonso Thomas, who works at the school with myself, Steve Wilson, who's a level 4 coach, and Dan Hellersvay, who's a level 3 coach. So there's 7 of us on the staff list. We've got just 20 cricketers with us, and it's been a wonderful couple of days, and we've got 2020 cricket tomorrow to go.
Oh, that's fantastic. Speaking of learning things and understanding things from other people, we are coming up towards the end of the year. We haven't got many shows left before we go on our Christmas and New Year break and go into a new season for next year. And so I thought it might be an interesting time to talk about what we've learned this year and how the people that we work with have changed this year. Not necessarily in terms of, you know, I've helped someone improve their cover drive, but more like, you know, what type of people, how cricketers are changing, as well as what you have learned as well and what I have learned over the last year or so. So, Gareth, do you want to maybe let me know what's come into your world this year?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest learner for me has been the projects that we've got going on in school from a technical perspective. So Steve Wilson's power hitting program, as he's opened my eyes into the types of ways that we can coach power hitting. It's obviously a huge part of the game now, which can be brought into all facets, not just the last 5 overs of a game, as it has been traditionally, but also into other areas of the game where you maybe fancy taking a bowler down or you really want to push on and you're feeling good, to have that tool that you can pick out your bag and use, just like your forward defensive shot, is magnificent. And he's opened my eyes. Some of the work that Dan Hallisvay has done around fast bowling, which is very much linked to the stuff that Kevin Shine's done with the ECB, but also with the stuff that Ian Ponton and Stephen Jones has done, has been great. And I'm learning so much from him, which has been fantastic. And I've got my own project going on at the moment, really getting to the nub of fielding. So having a look at diving techniques and throwing techniques. So it's been a year where we've immersed ourselves in research and trying to find out more and more about each of our specialist areas and then sharing that between us. And I've certainly learned from those two, which has just been a great thing. And the other thing I think always amazes me year on year, really, is how young players grow and how they start to do things and change behaviours and start to do things out on the pitch which are just beyond their years. And we've had lots of examples of that this year that I've been fortunate enough to sit on the side of cricket grounds and watch and marvel at. And you know, when I hear every week of the results of George Hankins out in Australia, who's just been signed by Gloucestershire County Cricket Club, who's scoring hundreds in A grade cricket out there at the age of 18, and then George obviously doing brilliantly for the under 19s with Tom Moores also out there as well. It's just wonderful to see what these guys and the guys and girls at school are achieving, you know, in an independent way rather than just being driven by myself, Dan and Steve. It's been lovely to pick up those little things, and we're all very proud of them.
It's become a cliche on cricket commentary to say players are different these days from what they were years ago. And I guess from year to year, it's hard to see changes. But you think over a longer period, over a 5 or 10 year period, the type of people who are coming into your coaching setup are changing in the way that they approach the game.
Well, I think it's that contact with the game all over the world that we have now that we didn't have maybe certainly when I was growing up. You know, our world was quite small. It was about what the people in the first team, if I was coming up through the levels at my cricket club at Venter, were doing. It was about maybe going over to Hampshire and watching a game at Hampshire and then aspiring to be that and learning from watching those games. But now you've got internet, you've got Sky Sports, you've got podcasts, you've got all manner of different ways of learning. And I think that's reflecting across in the way that the young players are coming in as well. So they're very, very much more worldly wise in terms of cricket than maybe we were 15, 20, 30 years ago. And that's a challenge for a coach, but it's one that I think we've all got to embrace. And just watching Finn Trinneuf play Gary Kirsten today, he was throwing as best as he could off spinners. Now he's thrown at the likes of Tendulkar and Dravid and Jack Callis and Graham Smith. And he said to me today, you know, he's bowled at those guys and thrown at those guys and he can hold his own against them. And then Finn Trinneuf, he's been working at his sweeps and reverse sweeps constantly in the last 2 months since he joined the school, absolutely took this world-class coach apart. And I don't think that a player 30 years ago would have been able to do that, because they wouldn't have seen as many examples of those things happening from all over the world. They might have seen one player who was in their local club or on the television watching a match for England, but now you can get access to all of these players all over the world, and they're beginning to take on these worldly skills, which is just so fascinating and exciting.
Do you think there's less fear around than there was years ago?
I do. And again, that's the formats of the game, I think. And I say this with a little bit of we need to make sure that we still respect our wicket as batters. I think that's massively important. And I think as bowlers, we've probably got to, respect the fact that the game is still about hitting length, bowling really good short balls and bowling Yorkers, isn't it? You know, we can get too far away from that sometimes. And but I really do think on the batting front that we've got to keep respecting our wicket. I think sometimes players can give it away a little bit too much and a bit too freely because there's always another innings, or this is how 2020 and 50 over cricket is. You know, the best players in the world are still the ones that can bat out there for most of the balls and then do something with most of those balls that's going to impact on the match, and that will never change. So we've got to make sure we keep people respecting the basics of a game, which is, you know, protecting your wicket and doing something with it, and also being able to deliver those three skills as a seam bowler in particular. If you can do that, you're not going to go too far wrong.
Yeah, you want to keep it as simple as possible, but no simpler is a phrase that I always come back to, and I like that a lot. And another thing that has really hit me this year is adaptability. You know how much I love a plan, Gareth. You know, I'm always thinking about things and trying to put things into structures and get things working in smooth, efficient ways. You know, like you imagine a beautifully made watch. You know, that's what the way I like things to be. But this year has been a lot about adaptability and learning how to change things on the fly and learn how people need to learn different things in different ways and be able to break out of the plan if you need to. And that's been a really powerful thing for me this year. I've taken a lot into that, into the winter. And I think our winter program is a lot better off the back of a summer program, which was maybe a little bit too overstructured and not quite adaptable enough.
But I think that comes from being exposed to new environments, doesn't it? And having to learn on your feet as opposed to being in those comfortable environments that you can pretty much dictate. And, you know, hats off to you. You made a real ambitious move up to Scotland, and it's something that is obviously given you some huge experiences that you're going to take forward and do brilliantly with. So well done, mate. It's always the unknown is always scary, but you stepped into it and embraced it. Good on you.
Oh yeah, I'm loving it. Couldn't be in a better place, I don't think. Fantastic. Right, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no. And Gareth, it's just you this time. So I've got the questions. And when you're ready, I'm going to fire away. First question. Batting first is easier.
No.
Second question. The best players are the most fearless.
No.
Third question. Modern players are worse at defending.
Yes.
Right, let's head into the questions section. Now, this is the... What I like to refer to as the mail bag, but there's no bag, and all the mail is electronic, of course. But nevertheless, the questions that we get every week are always fantastic. And the best question of the week, after we've done our best to answer it, wins a prize of an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send in your questions to us and get your chance to win that prize by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And the first question this week is from Shuka, and Shuka says, I'm a 19-year-old right arm medium pace bowler from India. I have a side on action. The problem with my bowling is that when my front foot lands, it doesn't point straight, rather it points towards third slip or more. Everyone tells me it's dangerous to bowl like that, but for the last couple of years I've noticed the way I walk and run, my left leg is angled to the left, and I can find it difficult while walking. When I try and correct it by pointing straight, it adds extra pressure on my legs, and I'll be in pain after about 5 overs when I try to do it like that. Plus, I can't get the pace I had earlier. When I concentrate on keeping my front foot straight, I lose all the other techniques badly. I asked for help from our college cricket team coach, and he told me to make my run-up angled, but that didn't make any difference. Still, my front foot is angled towards the slips. Please, can you help me to overcome this problem? So that splay, I suppose, is another way of putting it. Gareth, what do you think?
Yeah, brilliant question. Lovely detail. Thank you, Shakur. That's really helpful. There are two ways of looking at this question. And firstly, from a health perspective, from how your body's reacting, and secondly from a performance perspective. And what I'm picking up from this is that when you have made the what we would call generic adaptations, it's caused two things to happen. One, it's begun to hurt you, and that is feedback to your system, which tells you that probably the way you were doing it before is the way that you need to go with it. And secondly, that your performance dipped in terms of your pace in particular, which is what you're reporting back. Now, It sounds like quite an extreme splay when we look at generic models around fast bowling. And obviously those generic models there are there as a starting point for us. So we've all got an image in our head that we can work from. And it's the start of a plan, I suppose, from a bowling coaching point of view. But we do see some really good examples of people who, despite all of this generic modelling around bowling, will have nuances. Idiosyncrasies, as Stephen Jones calls it, that may not be unbelievably brilliant in terms of reaching peak pace, but actually keeps people healthy and also keeps them performing as well. And I mean, Jimmy Anderson has got a splay on his front foot and has had a splay on his front foot throughout the whole of his career. Probably not as extreme as yours, Shakur, with the going towards sort of second or third slip, but it's definitely there. And I know there's been times at the outset of his career that he probably looked to change those things. And, you know, I'm touching a bit of wood because obviously I want Jimmy to go as well as possible. But when he made those changes, he was more prone to injury, just like you've reported back as well. And this goes on to my next point, which is the guys that I work with out in Switzerland at France, Bertrand and Ralph, they would say, listen to your body rather than everybody. And your body does the things that it does because that is the way that it's organised. If you listen to your body, you're not going to go too far wrong. And I would equate it to something like Graham Smith batting, who we talked about last week, having a method and a technique that you probably wouldn't want to pick up and stick on everybody. But actually for him, it worked brilliantly. And as a result, he averaged just short of 50 in Test match cricket. And I think most of the listeners out there listening to this podcast would have taken that in the same way as they'd have taken Jimmy Anderson's English record for Test wickets taken. So to me, I would stick with what you've done. Your body is telling you that it's the way that it wants to do things. You can keep improving, obviously, but probably changing that foot alignment is going to have such a negative effect on the things that sit above those feet. Because you've bowled, even at the ripe old age of 19, which isn't very old, you've bowled a lot of repetitions on that. And unless you're getting pain, or unless you think you could go to the next level up as a bowler, I wouldn't bother changing it.
So what's the potential problems if you are splaying your foot? Trouble with the ankle, possibly?
Well, it could be, but again, it's not being reported in this one. But if we go back to somebody who is splaying, yeah, absolutely. You can look at the way that the foot lands, and you can get ankles, effectively ankles and knees. And the challenge with having that splayed foot when somebody is reporting that it's having an impingement somewhere, whether it be an ankle or knee or maybe a groin or wherever the case may be, is as the foot hits the ground and the bowling action starts to unravel, you know, that's when the peak forces go throughout the body. And if you can imagine putting that peak force through you on a repetitive basis, then there's a good chance that things are going to impinge, or they're going to collapse, or they're going to put stresses on parts of the body that you don't really want. And if that's the case, then yes, you must have a look at it. But to me, if somebody can bowl safe, I go back 10 years or so, Andre Now, you know, fantastic bowler, Andre Now. In the same way as Graham Smith, we wouldn't put his technique on top of a batter necessarily. You wouldn't necessarily give everybody Andre Nell's action, but if you had somebody who ran up and bowled like Andre Nell because it's the most natural thing in the world to them, then away you go. You know, going back donkey's years, Colin Croft, exactly the same idiosyncrasies that they worked with and became incredibly successful and healthy over a long period of time. You know, these guys bowled a mountain of overs, and it sounds to me as if Shakur can do that when he's bowling with his action, in the way that his body wants to do it. But I'm always loath to change something unless somebody is reporting an injury or pain, or if they really want to go to the next level, and then we can look to try and unravel what that might look like and what that might shape like. But I would be very, very hesitant to make a change to somebody who's healthy and doing all right with the ball, just because it doesn't look right.
He says he walks with his feet spread out as well. It'd be interesting to see as well how he squats, what happens when he squats. Because if he's from the subcontinent, you find that a lot of people can... I'm not talking about squatting with a weight, just a body weight squat. Mm. A lot of people from the subcontinent can squat down no problem with their toes pointing forward,
mm.
all the way to the ground. You know, they can touch their bum on their ankles. You know, no, it's no trouble at all. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there. That might reveal a little bit about the structure of his hip, because not everybody can do that. You know, some people have different shaped hips, and it means that you can't squat down between your legs, essentially, unless you splay your feet out. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what that is. And it may be that he can, with a, you know, by trying to hold himself in a squat position, he might get a little stretch and it'll start sort of rotating his leg back around in his hip to maybe straighten him out slightly. And that's just a general good thing for general health, having good hip mobility. So there's no harm in doing that. And if it comes that he loses that splay a little bit as a result of that, then great. But if not, he'd be a little bit healthier with a little bit more flexible hip. So you can't really lose by doing that, getting into a squat position and holding it in there for 30 seconds or something, and then pulling yourself back up and seeing if that slightly adjusts the position of your feet could help. Next question's from Liam. And Liam says, I'm a seam bowler, but I don't hit the seam consistently enough. I've tried gripping the ball on one side of the seam and gripping the ball on the actual seam, but to no avail. I'm wondering how Glenn McGrath used to so consistently extract sideways movement, and any grips that I should try.
Yeah, another good question. And again, there's more than one way of answering this, but Glenn McGrath's grip was incredibly simple. And anybody who's seen his masterclass that has been featured on Sky Sports around the world over the last year or so will notice that it's just the conventional grip. He literally didn't want to canter the seam. He just held the seam. And I suppose that basic position, the first one that any coach or even a parent would have taught you when you first picked up a cricket ball. The beauty of his bowling action and the way that he went about his business, that he was able to hold the ball in that fashion and ensure that his fingers were directly behind it, because his action allowed that to happen. So to me, go with a really basic grip to start off with. Don't get too funky before you really explore what your bowling action is looking like, because it sounds to me that underneath that wrist position and that fingers behind the ball, you've probably got something which is meaning that you're having to compensate with your wrist, the last chain, last link in that kinetic chain, to get the ball to go straight. And that's probably more of a reason why you're not hitting the seam so much, rather than the fact that you grip. So I'd always look at the action first. It's difficult from your question to get any more detailed than that, but Glenn McGrath hit the seam because he had a very basic grip position. He hardly did anything different the whole of his career, and he'd said it himself. I asked him about game plans once and he laughed at me, you know, and just said, I aim to hit a length to get the ball in around the top of off stump, and if the ball deviates, it's a bonus. And then what do you do? Well, I look to hit length to get it around the top of off stump, and if it deviates, it's a bonus. And obviously he did get it to deviate, but it was mostly seam movement. He wasn't a huge swinger of the ball. And when he did swing it, he just pitched the ball up that little bit further. That's all that he did. And, you know, it was such a simple plan. But it all came off the back of a very basic grip and a very repeatable bowling action that allowed that grip to be right behind the back of the ball when he was letting go of it. And it sounds to me that a bit of video action would do you no harm whatsoever, just to get that awareness of how your body unravels, which then could impact on the way that you're having to compensate when you're letting go of the ball at the top of your bowling circle.
What sort of reasons do you see the ball not hitting the seam? Is it that the arm's maybe a little low sometimes? Or are there other things that come before that?
Yeah, that is one. But it can also be that the left arm, for example. I mean, there's loads, David, as you're very aware. But it could be that the left arm is pulling, instead of pulling straight down and into the side of the body, is pulling out to the offside of a right-handed batter. And as a result of that, the bowling circles aren't going towards the batter. And of course, you know, our bodies and, you know, the whole human body is absolutely amazing. And our brain can't keep up with it, but we've got these little things that just compensate for us. So if our left arm goes and we end up coming round ourselves when we bowl a little bit, you can imagine that the wrist will do whatever it can to get that ball online. All it knows is it's got to go towards those stumps down the other end, towards that batter, and it will find little ways of just adjusting and compensating to make that happen. But obviously by doing that, it changes the angle of the seam at release, which then changes its path of travel, and it changes the way that the ball hits the ground. And you'll often find, in fact, you know, Stephen Jones himself, he talks about the art of the game now. There were times in Steph's career where he couldn't hit the seam. And as a result, it made him very difficult to be selected for Somerset sides, because we had Richard Johnson, who was a great swing bowler. We had Andy Caddick, who's a fantastic practitioner, a good seam bowler. And then Steph was doing some great stuff in terms of velocity, but he wasn't hitting the seam because his action wasn't repeatable enough in a good way. And he'd end up coming around and he'd always scuff up the shiny side of a ball to a way swinger, to a right-hander as a result. And it made him very difficult to select at times of his career. But fortunately, because Steph's such a hard worker, he went back and he worked at his game, and then got his release and his action right, and as a result became a really good bowler again towards the back end of his career with three counties.
Yeah, you don't want to be scuffing up the shiny side, do you? That's not going to make you friends with the other bowlers. You want to make sure that seam's getting hit.
Absolutely, but I don't think there's ever been a bowler who's gone through the whole of his career without having that happen to him, because yeah, things do go a little bit out of kilter, don't they, in bowling actions. And it's often not the wrist. It's always the wrist that we look at first as coaches, because we look at outcome, we look at the last bit. Often it's what sits underneath it. And, you know, Steph and hundreds of bowlers, thousands of bowlers would have experienced that in their time. And just really refining that action and making sure that it's repeatable. Your bowling circles are going towards the direction of where you want to bowl the ball will mean that you'll have to compensate less at the top of the bowling circle. And that sounds to me, what you're doing here, fella, is having to make compensation. So get some video footage from the front. Get somebody lying on the floor straight down the wicket so you can run past bowl and run past them. That's a great angle from behind and from the side. Have a little look and you'll notice it. You'll notice something happening underneath. And then when you get that bit right, then you can go away and start doing some drills. We've got enough resources on the site that you can go to, pick up a bowling course, and I'm sure you'll be able to correct yourself. And all of a sudden, it won't be a grip that you're having to do anything about, because everything's in line. You're driving behind the back of the ball and you're hitting the seam more often.
And those tempeh drills, the Ian Pont 4 tempehs, are a great place to start, aren't they? You get yourself into those four positions slowly at first, and then gradually building it back up, and you can really start to feel the difference. I've got one bowler who's really bought into that, and you know, he'll turn up to a training session and just get on with doing his tempeh drills before anyone's even said hello to him. You know, he'll just be straight in there getting the tempehs done, getting his medicine ball throws done, and then he gets in straight into bowling. So it's a really powerful tool that with very simple drills. You don't need anything complicated or a lot of equipment.
Very good. They give you a really good foundation, I think. And it's certainly something that it's enhanced my coaching, and certainly enhanced the bowlers at school as a result of the work that Dan Hellesvay is doing with them. We had one example today, a guy called William Easterfield, who was struggling to get into his A team at the beginning of last year. He's had a fantastic time because he's worked really hard on those drills and other aspects of his game. And, you know, he was bowling Yorkers aplenty today and hitting the seam and causing problems to some very good players as a result of that hard work in those drills. So I think they're a really good starting point always. But it's often what sits underneath, not necessarily the grip that causes the problems. If you've got a basic grip, then you'll be going all right as long as everything falls underneath.
So now we have a minute on the clock, and we have Mark Garraway ready to speak for that minute about whatever he likes in this week's Soapbox. Gareth, over to you.
Well, this week, and I've alluded to it a little bit, it's Gary Kirsten week. And what we've learned this week is when he talks, it's so powerful, and it's not necessarily what he says, but the way he says it. And the thing that I've picked out is how important the facial expression is, because it's a massive communicator, isn't it? You know, when you're talking to young players, when you're talking to old players, the words are great, but actually the facial expression, if you're showing that you're really passionate, if you're showing that you're listening and you're engaged with the person that you're coaching, then you get so much of a better reaction. Then the other thing that Gary does, which is magnificent, is key words that he wants to get across. He really accentuates them. He says them louder. He says them sharper. He says them with more passion. And then as a result, people listen and hang on to those words, and it changes behaviours. You can see why he's been successful over the years. Language, facial expressions, and then the words.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We are wrapping things up here. But before we go, we're going to do one more thing, and that is to decide on the winner of the competition. Of course, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions vying for that very prize are Shuka's question. Shuka's question about his leg splaying out, and Liam's question about fast bowling grip. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go for Shuka's question this week. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Wonderful detail. Somebody who's recognised, I think, that his bowling action is his, and the way that his left foot splays is very much part of his being, relating that across to his walking patterns and other things. And I think he was probably just looking for a bit of clarification from us and a bit of maybe confidence to continue doing what he's doing. So very pleased to hopefully have helped you there, fella, and congrats on winning the course.
Yep, well done. Hopefully that can help you further. And Gareth, if somebody was thinking that they wanted to win the prize and they also maybe had a question that they wanted us to answer, if you've got those two things in your head, how could they send those questions into us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or you can tweet us at pitchvisionacad. That's our social media. And if you want to listen to the show every week, then you can do so by subscribing. It's free, and you can do it in any podcast catching program. Just go to your favorite app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in there, and when you find us, tap that subscribe button. You can do that on any device that you like. If you want to get the show notes or listen to old shows, download old shows to your computer or anything like that, you can go to the Pitch Vision Academy website and do all of that. You can find us at pitchvision.com/academy and just click on the podcast link to get all the old shows there, all the old show notes, and all the other fun stuff. And of course, all the academy articles and everything are in there as well. So there's loads for you to be getting on with if you're a bit of a cricket badger. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.